So how do you react when the heat is on? Do you choose to concentrate on some things and perhaps end up neglecting others in the process? Or do you try and manipulate the situation just to cool it down a bit, take some of that heat out? Or do you simply run away, try and get out of here? Or do you plead with the Lord for strength? You see, today in our journey to the cross, the heat is being turned up. And we see here from the perspective of Matthew what happens under those circumstances. Just as a bit of background, we had the first in this series from Matthew chapter 26 2 weeks ago. And if you've got a Bible, it'd be great if you could turn to that chapter. If you haven't, and you'd like to stick your hand up, then we've got Bibles and can bring them around. Ian spoke to us, didn't he, from the very beginning of the chapter, where we're reminded of how aware Jesus was of what was coming. As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, Jesus said, and the Son of Man, that's himself, will be handed over and be crucified. It was very clear to Jesus. He knew what was coming. And then, as we proceed through that chapter, the woman anoints Jesus with perfume. Judas agrees to betray Jesus. That's where we got to last time. And then we're just skipping over this period where the disciples prepare the Passover and Jesus and his disciples eat that Last Supper together. And then Jesus, for the second time, predicts Peter's denial. And so we arrive at verse 36. Now, this is where the disciples come to a place called Gethsemane. And is the first slide? Yep, there we go. So there we have an image of this olive grove, as it's generally thought, a garden outside Jerusalem. You see, during the Passover, Jerusalem was really packed, and there wasn't enough accommodation to go round, so people would actually go out and just kip in the countryside. And this was the place that Jesus and his disciples had chosen to stay, an olive grove called Gethsemane. And it was basically a primitive campsite. So imagine this place, olive trees, perhaps some olive presses, the smell of olive oil around. And it was dark. And I want us to focus on three particular aspects of this story this morning. Jesus' anguish, the body, and a cup. And I've chosen those just with an A and a B and a C, so hopefully you can remember these and just continue to ponder them during this coming week. So let us start with the first of these, Jesus' anguish. This is an amazing episode where we really see the humanity of Jesus. And there's a number of ways here, five, which I'd just like to draw out, in which we see Jesus' anguish. First of all, then, in verse 36, we see this need he had to be with the Father, to take some time out, sit here while I go over there and pray. Jesus needed that space, didn't he? But he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him. In verse 37, we read. It's interesting, these were some of his closest friends, it's generally thought, amongst the disciples, because it was also those three, the sons of Zebedee, incidentally, James and John, and it was those three, Peter, James and John, who went up the mountain with Jesus at the Transfiguration. And it's those same three who Jesus says, come along with me. He chose to take close friends with him. And then he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Now, many would say those words don't translate well enough into English. Perhaps we should be talking about anguish and distress. It's a very strong word in the Greek. And surely it was. For Jesus had seen people crucified often enough. He'd been past that place outside the town where people were crucified. And he'd seen the life slowly and painfully bleeding out of them. So no wonder then that Luke tells us, when he describes the same episode, that being in anguish, he prayed and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. And here he says to his friends, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." He would rather die now than have to go through with that kind of death. And he asked his friends to stay awake, stay here, and keep watch with me. So then, in verse 39, he goes just a little further, and he fell on his face to the ground. Another sign, surely, of his distress. And he pleaded, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me." Jesus asked if there was a way for him not to go through with this. He pleaded for an alternative to this suffering. And yet, this was something just between him and the Father. He didn't take any practical measures to actually avoid this. Just think about this. They always went to that garden to stay. And so he went, as usual, Luke tells us, to that same garden that night. Judas knew where they would be. He was in no way trying to avoid this suffering. Instead, he chose not to manipulate the situation, but stayed within the Father's will and just came to the Father and said, "Is there no way? Is it not possible for this cup, this suffering, to be taken from me?" And so here we see this expression, don't we, of someone who was God and knew the plan, knew the Father's will on one hand, and on the other hand was a man who was grappling with the suffering that he was to face. This was truly God made man. Don't we see in these things there's nothing watered down about Jesus' humanity? He knew the same human experiences that we know. He knew those needs and emotions. And I think you see here, he's felt them to an intensity beyond that which most of us will ever know. He has been there as a man. "Yet not my will, but yours," he is able to pray. He is still wanting to align himself with the will of the Father. So he returns to his disciples. He found them sleeping. "Could you men not keep watch with me for an hour?" he asked Peter in verse 40. In this great anguish, his disciples could not stay awake with him. And so maybe we add to this list also that loneliness, that those who he wanted to be awake with him could not do it. Don't we often just need that? We need someone just to stay awake with us, don't we, in a time of need. And perhaps in prayer, to have someone close by who we know is also calling on the Lord and coming to the Lord in prayer with us. And yet even that was denied to Jesus. How did he feel? How would we react? I think we would be so upset, wouldn't we? "Oh, come on, that's all I asked you to do, just to stay awake with me. And you can't even do that." And yet, Jesus' concern is different. He says, "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Out of Jesus' anguish, what we actually see here is a concern for his disciples. If you think about parents with their children, don't we often have to tell our children to do things, ask our children to do things. And I just think of asking Rachel or Adele to set the table. Why do I do that? Well, it's helpful, isn't it? But it's also good for them. We ask people, we ask our children, don't we, as parents, to do things that are good for them. Because ultimately, they need to learn that life has chores in it. And so also here, Jesus doesn't ask his disciples to watch and pray. God doesn't ask us to do things just to be servants, things that will serve his needs, without also being very aware that the things which God asks of us are also for our own good. They are the very things that we need. And so let's just explore this a little bit more. These words, this little lesson that Jesus pauses to give his disciples in verse 41. What does he ask them to do? To watch and pray. And why? So that you will not fall into temptation. And why might they fall into temptation? Because the spirit is willing, but the body is weak, Jesus says. The spirit is willing, isn't it, for believers? We've seen this here. We've seen James and John, those first two of those three disciples, we've seen them, Jesus asked them in chapter 20, can you drink the cup I'm going to drink? We can, they answered. They are so willing to walk with Jesus, to follow him. And Peter has also said, even if I die with you, I will never disown you. And all the disciples said the same. Their spirit is so willing, isn't it, to go with Jesus even to the death. And if this morning you believe, you will know that by God's grace, he gives us that desire, doesn't he, to do his will. You will agree with that, I'm sure, that we have that desire to genuinely do what God knows is best for us. We genuinely believe that, and we don't want to do anything but that which God has for us, to do his will. And yet, it's not that simple, is it? For the body is weak. Or as it's often called, the flesh is weak. That humanity that remains in each of us. And Jesus asked them for something quite simple. Just to stay awake and keep watch with him for an hour. They were so ready in their spirits, and yet they'd fallen at this first hurdle. They were too weak to do it. They fell to sleep. And not only once, but then Jesus gives them this bit of teaching and goes away and comes back a second time and found them sleeping again in verse 44. And then a third time, are you still sleeping and resting in verse 45? Oh, how true it is. I'm sure many of you have often prayed for extended periods. I tried it just this week again, to pray for an hour. And it's hard, isn't it? The flesh can be weak. And we should face that weakness head on. We should acknowledge that weakness. We should acknowledge how little it takes to distract us from what the Spirit wills to do. For us it may be sleep, for us it may be other temptations. But let's not pretend that we have the strength to do God's will. For the body is weak. So what should we do? We should watch and pray, Jesus says. To watch means to be alert, to have our eyes open. And that wasn't just physically, that wasn't just about looking out for Judas and the band of people who were going to come and arrest Jesus. It's about being spiritually alert, keeping watch spiritually. What were the temptations that were going to come to the disciples? It was to desert Jesus, wasn't it? It was to disown Jesus. And they had a choice. They could sleep, and they could be oblivious to those temptations that were coming, even at that stage. I think we're surrounded, aren't we, by people who are actually just comatose somehow to the temptation of the world, to the control that sin has on us. I know when I think about my colleagues, most of them think, I'm not weak, I can do what I want. But they don't realize, actually, that we are so controlled by the weakness of our sinful nature. And we can't actually do what our spirit wills, even as believers in our own strength. But if we watch, we are aware, and we are vigilant of those temptations in the world, we can see them coming, whatever they may be. And we can see them for what they are. We can nail them as temptations. And I know we all know in our hearts what our weaknesses and our temptations are. I'm afraid one of mine is the most bizarre thing. I don't know why, but something I enjoy doing is rearranging furniture and planning out a room. And just yesterday, I'd set aside the day to spend some time with the family and to prepare for this morning. And then in the middle of the afternoon, I find myself thinking, oh yeah, we could move that round. And let's just try it. And I knew if I start, it will be another 2 hours and I'd have spent all these different arrangements and then come back to where it was in the beginning. Oh, what a waste of time. But it's a weakness. And I think having thought about this during the week, I was actually able to nail it. And I say, yes, Russell, that's a crazy weakness that you have. And if you actually see that for what it is, then you can actually see what is important for you to do today and not just give in to it. Because I wanted to start rearranging the furniture. I don't know why exactly, but I did. And so it is. We need to actually understand and watch out for those weaknesses. But not only that, is it? It's to watch and to pray. To pray to the God who is the only one who can supply the strength we need. You see, the disciples needed to be watching and praying and drawing on the strength to see them through those testing days that were to come. It's like a security guard, isn't it? Imagine somebody who is patrolling some industrial plant or something at night, and his job is to make sure it's secure. But instead, he decides to sleep and to turn his radio off. It is ineffective, isn't it? We are called as Christians to be those kind of security guards who have their eyes open. We are looking for what is coming and have our radio on so we can talk to the Father. But the body is weak and it's not always easy. We don't pretend that. So let's encourage one another in this. You see, even Jesus had the humility, didn't he, to ask of this, of his disciples, to express this need to them. Stay here and keep watch with me. He didn't want to be doing this on his own. He wanted to be doing this with his brothers, with the disciples. And so should we. For if we're to walk in that way of watchfulness and prayerfulness, we need to do it together, to ask our brothers and sisters to support us in this, and to look out for those who need someone to watch and pray with them. So let's think about that. Let's think about actually following in Jesus' way and having the humility to say, will you just support me in this thing I'm grappling with the Lord? And will you offer it perhaps where somebody you see needs that? Maybe it's time to think about a prayer triplet or a twin or a prayer square or whatever. That's one way in which we can do that. So here, in the middle of this passage, Jesus, in his anguish, takes time out to give this one verse of teaching to his disciples that they would watch and pray so they don't fall into temptation. And then he goes away and he practices what he preaches. He prays a second time. And here we see the power of that prayer and watching in action. For he prays, my Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. It's a subtle change, isn't it, from the first prayer? But it is dramatic. That is a huge change. Jesus has embraced the Father's will. If there is no other way,
for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, then your will be done. I will do this. He is willing to drink that cup if it is not possible for it to be taken away any other way. He has embraced the Father's will in that second prayer. But it is not only something of spirit in prayer for Jesus, for there is also their strength, isn't there? Strength in his body. We see that then later on when he says, look, after the third time he's prayed, look, the hour is near, in verse 45. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go, he says. Let us go. In the Greek, that has that sense of let's face our enemies here. He was given us strength, wasn't he? To be betrayed into the hands of sinners. To be tested by the very worst that sinful humankind could throw at him. And yet he said, rise, let us go. He was strengthened there through this watching and praying to face that. So, we see those two verses. May your will be done. Strength to know God's will, to embrace God's will, and to rise and go and do God's will. But I'd like to come back to one more thing. I'd like to come back to the cup. It's one of the most amazing things for me in this passage is this idea of a cup. In Bible, the cup is a symbol of a divinely appointed fate. It's what God dishes out to us. And it's often a symbol of suffering, suffering under God's wrath. In Isaiah 51, verse 17, it's put, you have drunk from the hand of the Lord the cup of wrath. You have drained it to its dregs, the goblet that makes people stagger. For everyone has said in his heart at some point, I'll live my own way, thank you very much, God, haven't they? We've all turned our back on him. We've actually all been through that place where our spirit is not willing, where we actually don't want to go God's way, where we've been in a place of rebellion. That's where we've come from. And we deserve to stew in our own juices, don't we? In our own juices of separation from God, of God's wrath, of being apart from him. That cup of suffering, that cup of medicine. And we deserve to drain it to the last drop. But of course, if we do drink that cup of God's wrath to the last drop, that's not it, is it? Because it fills up again. There's more sin to come. There's more rebellion to come. And the problem is, the cup doesn't go away. It just fills up again with more. There is no way for that cup to be taken away except by one who is sinless, one who is perfect. And that was Jesus. If it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. And Jesus' death on the cross took it away once and for all. So there we see those verses, first from Isaiah, the cup of God's wrath drained to its dregs. But see, I have taken out of your hand the cup that made you stagger. From that cup, the goblet of my wrath, you will never drink again. For Jesus has drunk it for us. He chose to take this cup in our place. And that's amazing, isn't it? It's the most amazing thing, not only in this passage, it's the most amazing thing in the history of the universe, that Jesus took that cup out of our hand. And so really we see here the full extent of Christ's anguish. It was not just at the physical prospect of crucifixion that Jesus was burdened when he prayed in the garden. It was at the fact that the burden of the sin of the whole world, of drinking that cup of God's wrath for all mankind, all humankind, for all time, and the resulting separation that we deserve, he took on himself. It was a spiritual suffering. And he knew that he wouldn't experience that in drinking that cup. So that was what compounded Jesus' anguish. And so, just to close then, we come back to the A, the B, and the C. Jesus' anguish. The body. You see, the fact that Jesus has paid once and for all for our sin doesn't mean that the sin doesn't matter anymore. The response to the temptations we face is still important. It's still important that we find strength to do God's will, to do the will that he's put in our spirits by his Holy Spirit. And so we are taught to be aware of that weakness in the body, to watch and to pray, that we would do the right thing when the heat is on. How could you be more watchful and prayerful when you face trials and temptations? It's one of the questions that I know I've been asking of myself. It'd be good just to think about that. Do we come to others and express our needs? Ask them to support us in watching and praying. Go to others offering that support. Or do we run away or try and manipulate the situation instead? And then the cup. We'll be passing a cup around shortly. But it's not a bitter cup that we deserve. It is the cup of the new covenant, the cup that is here. And this cup is for all who want to personally accept that Jesus has drunk the cup of God's wrath down to the dregs. He's taken that cup that we deserve and given us instead this cup to drink. The psalmist summed it up so well when he said, I will take the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. Will you? Let's pray.